Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, Governor. I was just chimneying your sweep up and saw all the soot's gone. I'll disappear into some smoke and do my podcast now. Hi, guys.
Can I tell you, I saw Dick Van Dyke like in person like a couple months ago, and he looked amazing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He was spry. Just
old.
Just
how old is super how old is Dick?
He's up there, but he looked great. Looked just, you know,
yeah.
Just, that's what and that other voice you hear, by the way, is Justin Robert Young.
You know, because you got to figure that guy's got some miles on him. God bless him, though. Like, that's great.
I'll tell you what, man. When I got the opportunity to meet Martin Gardner, it's amazing. He was 90 plus something, and he spoke a little bit slowly and had a little bit of a lisp that he pointed out. I didn't even notice, but he said I asked him if he would ever do anything on camera, and he's like, all right, I just don't, you know, essentially between the lines, it's like, look at this vessel. This is ridiculous. I don't want to, no, yeah. You know, it's, but he was 100% upstairs, man.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, we just popped up on the screen. Dick Van Dyke is 91. This is a guy that has lived an incredible life, you know, great entertainer. And I'm just looking through here of, you know, his, you know, this is where, what he, you know, this is a guy that just seen so much. And then I didn't get a chance to talk to him that much, but he was, you know, talked to some friends of mine. I was just like, you know, left high school in 1944, intending to join the United States Army Air Force for pilot training, denied enlistment several times for being underweight. He was eventually accepted for service as a radio announcer before transferring to the special services and entertaining troops. I mean, that's hey guys, I don't know what you did your senior year of high school, but I sure as heck didn't try to like go off and fight a war in another country.
God, dude, a high school conversation for Dick Van Dyke could be like, you know, I think that Hitler's a problem. Like, I think he's a real issue that needs to be dealt with. Oh, my God. You see what Hitler's up to?
Well, maybe we'll find out a little bit later. But in the meantime, guys, you know what we need to do on Weird Things? We need a nice, relaxing vacation.
Oh, let's just chill out, man. Normally, everything on here is just about violent animal attacks or some weird creepy sighting that'll raise the hairs in the back of your neck.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We've been meaning to bring this up for a while, Andrew, but Justin and I were talking. It's like, we're just going to take a break from weird things. We're going to go relax on a vacation.
Yeah. I like pina coladas.
And I like getting caught in the rain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, did you answer the same personals ad that I answered? Oh, this is going to be awkward.
Spoiler. We had to laugh about it because we're both two-timing whores. So I want to tell you about a beautiful, beautiful island. It's tropical. It's going to be hot and a nice hot, like wear your Speedos, not even your cargo shorts kind of way.
Oh,
you know, relax on the beach. And you know what the best part about this island is, guys?
Hmm.
It's magical.
Oh, I mean, that there's no way that could be negative.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Brian might be doing a backflip here, but I distrust magic inherently. What are we promising here?
So when I say magical, I mean that like it's what makes it special is, you know, how like on Lost, like, you know, John Locke could walk.
Polar bears. There's polar bears on the island, Justin.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
In the polar bears in the tropics, but
no answers, but yes, polar bears.
Yeah, so like cool things could happen, like you'd see like dead relatives and stuff, but nothing like that, guys. Nothing really weird like that. You know, islands are great environments for things adapting and evolving. And one of the cool things they have on this island is, do you like lemurs?
Sure, dude. They got the rings around the tails and the big eyes and the hearts filled with joy and the spirit of giving. Yes.
So imagine a place where you have these lovely, adorable lemurs, but they can fly.
Justin.
Flying lemurs?
Yeah.
That sounds adorable.
Yeah. So Bryce, I think, has some video of that. It's like a flying lemur. Just a flying lemur. I want to see a flying lemur. You want to see a lemur fly?
It's got to be kind of like the like a flying squirrel, right? Where they kind of glide and...
Look at that. Look at the
dude.
They
got wingsuits. Look at this guy.
That lemur, where are you going to go, lemur? You going to fly around like a crazy lemur?
Going to run out of tree, lemur.
It's just going to chill out while...
Now imagine the first person to see these flying lemurs.
Oh, sure. So you get to the island and you look, you're like, why did that lemur have gastric bypass surgery?
Exactly.
And never
what it looks like.
So, never get around to stitching up the extra skin.
So we're not watching a lot of flying lemurs. We're watching a lot of little cross between lemurs and pancakes right now, clinging to trees.
Which is, you know, their natural state.
Yeah, I don't know, if you say so. But I assure you, I've been told that they can fly. I'm told that this on this island they can fly. Mm. So let's get to some flying, because I want to see some lemurs flying.
It's fine. I believe that they fly. We'll see it fly, and it'll be delightful. So we go to the beach. Another video never is shown.
Oh, God damn it! I swear to God, I'm tired of these YouTube creators just taking shots of lemurs and lying about
this
the property. By which
zero out of zero would not watch again.
Someone
lemur does not fly.
Down.
Okay.
And it's funny because, like, I guess this video just shows, you know. And
classic,
by the way, this
was, YouTube right, got, lemur bait.
I think we might have another one here from Nat Geo.
Nat Geo. And everything they do is legitimate, guys.
It, yeah, trust me. Whatever
it's
gonna do. Oh, my God.
They're like hops off the ground.
Hopefully fly from one tree to another.
I mean, I don't know if he hopped any further than he would without the skin flaps, to be honest with you.
But he can get up there to the top and then take a nice little glide.
Put a GoPro on this thing?
Yeah, they did. They did. They put a little tiny camera on it.
It's amazing. Nothing's safe.
Nice gliding shot.
They'll never know my secrets.
That's definitely a flying lemur.
FPS flying on a lemur.
That's pretty great.
As far as we know, he could just be throwing the camera to his buddies in the trees, but... We're watching the glide path of the lemur right now as he
like
flies.
Like from the lemur's
trees.
Point of view, too.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good. He's got some distance on that.
It's like, I didn't need your approval, Justin.
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to compliment you, defensive.
Lemurs are just like, they're a little sensitive because they're kind of gliders, not flyers. So anyhow, like, hey, flying lemurs. I mean, that's kind of awesome.
Oh,
yeah,
sure, yeah.
I know. This is a great, best vacation yet. High five.
One thing that's interesting, too, about evolution is sometimes things adapt to fill a niche, and it's helpful for you. Like other animals are like, that's a great thing. I'm going to do that, too. That's not really the way evolution works, but we'll just imagine that's the way it works, okay? You're like, oh, you know, you fly. You know what? I can fly, too. So this island, it doesn't just have lemurs that fly. They have a flying lizard. Flying dragon. You ever seen the dragon?
Hold on.
Ever seen a little flying dragon?
That sounds right. Wait,
there we go. Watch this dude.
Whoa. Okay, this is remarkable. It looks like he grew a wingsuit. His belly expanded and became razor thin and exploded out to the side, and dude is just floating.
Flying lizards, guys. It's a dragon. It's a dragon that flies. The snake's like, what? This is ridiculous. It's fair. So you want to go? Do you want to go there?
Yes. So much yes. I'll bring
a
net.
Hold on. Pause this hype train. I'm kind of uncomfortable about how willy-nilly God's tossing around this flight thing. Because
Look, in an island filled with a bunch of, you know, let's say even if they did have nefarious thoughts in mind, a bunch of flying creatures just means that we have the advantage because we specialize on ground, right? Like they're going to fly right over us. They won't know what's going on, but we'll be
on
the ground.
Saying, like maybe we'll get to fly too. And then once we fly, we're safe from everything.
You know what?
Happens in the sky.
I'm going to bring my drone. I'm going to bring my drone. It just got
repaired. Because your drone's never hurt anybody, Brian.
And it just got back from the it's about to get back from the shop. I'll make sure to bring it, and I'll fly it around. And if they do attack, then, you know, I'll say, go away, bad guys, drone attack. And then,
hey, Brian, is there any damage left on the drone?
Well, from the second time, yeah. I told you what happened, right? I lost one of the propellers. It went up. I accelerated up. I didn't put the clips on the top like I was supposed to because the propellers screw on the opposite mm-hmm. direction that they spin. So when I did a hard up, it did fine because it was spinning, you know, everything mm-hmm. tighter. Got yeah. up to this top, and I just let go, and it just stopped. And of the four propellers, one of them had that momentum, and stopping went the other way, so it screwed itself off.
I'm familiar with that problem.
And then having only three propellers, it round hard landed, and yeah. $500.
I was going to say that, like, you're going to have scars longer than your drone is.
Yeah, a little bit.
So anyhow, we got an island, but, you know, we got this island. So, like, flying things, like, lemurs get to fly. This cool little lizard dude gets to fly. I mean, guys, it's a trip. I'm booking you guys right now.
Yeah, dude, an island right. where things that normally don't fly but get to fly seems like a universal positive.
What's the deal breaker?
I mean, it's not like a apex level predator can fly, right? Or be made to fly on such an island to where...
You want
to
know what? Don't even answer. I think he's got a trustworthy face. I'm ready. Brian, we're booking our tickets. You're right. I was a little bit too judgy. We're in,
all
baby.
Right. Day one. Hey, Justin, look, they've got CNN for us to turn off. They've got, this is a great island.
Oh my God. You know, this is great. This is all my island dreams have come true. Thank God we're here.
You're going on a nature walk and you look and you see the flat little lemur climbing up and he waves to Justin. You guys. They don't do that. So he's probably got rabies, but that's okay. He waves like, hey guys, check me out. And he flies and he sails. And there's lemurs flying overhead like some sort of Disney cartoon, right?
Oh, that's wonderful.
Like the encyclopedia.
I reach up and attempt to high five the lemur as it goes past.
And he hits and he falls to the ground. He curls up and looks up at you like, why did you do that to me?
I say, don't worry, little guy. I scoop him up and I fling him as high as I can up into the air, assuming that he could just glide to safety.
And then you look over there and you say, hey, guys, check me out. Who said dragons aren't real? Where's the Khaleesi? And you look over and there's the flying dragon dude. Little guy, but his wings sprang open like. It's kind of like you're like, this is great. This is great. It's like the greatest thing ever. Things are flying. You're thinking maybe we should get some wingsuits. And then you hear, hey, guys, check me out.
Check, who says, Justin, that sounds, who says check me out?
Oh, my God, Brian, it's Satan himself.
I look for Satan while saying, this is holy water, I swear. Like, don't make me use this.
I've been called Satan before.
Oh my God, it's Voldemort!
No. Maybe. Maybe in one of his forms.
Ryan, I swear to God, we've been hoodwinked for the last time.
It's Gary Gygax, creator of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes. Yes. Reincarnated as Gary a flying Gygax. Snake.
Oh, flying snakes are a real thing. Oh, dear God, I'm looking at video of what appears to be.
Freeze it. Stop.
This all right, so is
Brian,
extraordinary.
Flying snakes aren't
video.
Real.
What's that?
Flying snakes aren't real.
I wouldn't think that. I mean, at that point, they would be wyverns,
thank
wouldn't
God,
they?
Thank God, Brian. Thank God, Brian. You want to know what? You're right. Flying snakes aren't real. What we're seeing isn't real. It's literally just our imagination. I don't know why we're sharing a vision right now, but
okay, all right, real
I consider
quick.
It a gift. Let's. Who cares? Whatever this thing is, not real.
Real quick, if you're going to guess, if you're going to gamble, let's say hypothetically a snake could fly and it doesn't appear to have any wings. What do you think it does? Do you think it does that belly flattening move like the dragon does? And coast on a wide belly.
The dragon's got like these sort of like wings that fold out because of some weird adaptation that feels like almost like extra limbs.
Right. It looked like forgive me if this is inaccurate, but it appeared as though his rib cage just suddenly widened out and became fingers and the whole
kinda
thing.
Like that,
and
yeah.
What do you think, Justin?
I think that it's the same thing as the lizard. Like that,
you don't think it has like a magic corkscrew?
Yeah.
Like it grooves around and hypnotizes you.
They just invented like hoverboards and stuff.
A dead polymer says it inflates like a balloon animal, like a Macy's Day float,
and just drifts down.
Roly poly snake. Hey guys, look at me.
And then and if it wants to move forward, it just snake farts.
All right, you ready? Let's see the rest of this here.
Transforms it into a much flatter, aerodynamic shape, similar to an airplane wing. It moves its head back and forth, which passes
way
oh
my God, both!
Like it's swimming in air. Professor Jake Socha carried out the study by creating a plastic copy of
the snake's
cross.
So what it does, it flattens and it corkscrews like the evilest boomerang in the world and just leaps out at stuff and just glides.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, not a fan. Do not want.
No, sir, I don't like it.
I'm again it.
Look at that thing go.
I'll tell you,
like it's slithering in air.
You know what? There's a lot of people who are against the theory of evolution on religious grounds. I'm against it on practical grounds. On this,
self-preservation.
Like I'm hereby against the evolution.
So imagine we're camping on the island. We're the first people there. These explorer tourists or whatever. And the three of us go for a walk. And
yeah.
Is that a flying squirrel? Like, yeah, it's cool, you know? And then we're like, that lizard, that's, you know, I guess that's cool. And then we go a little bit further and you're like, I'm like, hey, Justin Bryant, look, I just saw this greenish sort of thing just go from over there to over there. What was, I don't know, it's a leaf. You sure? Okay. I just saw it again.
I mean, on the list of things to consider, snake would be very, very low on my list.
We'd be looking on the ground, maybe on a branch. I'm like, I think there are snakes that fly through. You'd be like, no, this is not some Edgar Rice Burroughs story.
Ah, jeez.
Can we please send an email to Ja Rule to have him throw the next fire festival on this island?
Well, that went so well, right? What could
well,
go
just,
wrong?
I mean, yeah. Except now, it obviously has a brand for like disaster tourism. Now it'll be like, no, it'll actually happen, but it's a survival festival, and Blink 182 is still playing. But now there's flying snakes.
Man, that would be amazing.
And thank you, by the way, to Daniel Cervantes. Who sent this to us? Much appreciated.
Daniel's the one that helped coordinate me going out to give a speak in Kuala Lumpur, where I got to meet Marco Tempest and do stuff with him. Very good fan. Good fan.
Good fan.
Amazing. Well, I'll tell you what. You too can be thanked if you go on over to patreon.com/weirdthings and support this program right there over there on the Patreon. If you would like to kick us a couple ducats, it would be greatly, greatly appreciated. And now, being a patron is even more exciting than it ever has been. Right, Bryce?
That's right. We're doing we're going when we hit $600, we're about $109 short. We're going to start the Journey Saga.
That's right. This is our efforts to carve out and collect the complete Journey Quest Saga into its own experience.
Right. It'll be its own RSS feed that you can only get if you are a patron. So head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings if you're not already, and consider throwing us a buck an episode, even a buck a month.
It's a win-win because let's say you love Journey Quest. You get a special RSS feed of Journey Quest. And let's say you don't like Journey Quest. That you can get Journey Quest out of your weird things.
you can safely just end the episode at the end.
Yeah. So it's just can't go wrong on that. You guys are pretty busy, right? Keep active.
You mean physically active or just active, busy doing stuff?
Whatever.
Man, there's a lot I do. I do a lot.
Yeah, man. Column A, column B. Trying to keep physically and mentally fit while slashing through a busy schedule.
So let me ask you a question. Did either of you, while doing all these important things that you're doing, I don't know, figure out, you know, how human anatomy works, do your own dissections and stuff, provide some of those detailed drawings of the human figure ever?
That sounds, Meyer, like an old man, dude. Da Vinci kind of maneuver. Not us. We're busy. No. We're busy making them dollars, making them fat stacks.
Oh, but to be fair, man, that's one. It's just been a stubborn little to do on the wonder list. Just, you know, just waiting to be done. So I haven't gotten around to it yet, though.
Did you paint some of the greatest works of art known to man?
I mean, as far as you know, I mean, whether or not the world recognizes our talents, that's something. You know, did you know that nobody appreciated Van Gogh when he was alive? I figure we're in the same bucket, Ducket.
So do you consider one of the world's greatest paintings?
No. No.
Okay.
You ever have like an idea? You're like, man, I got to get around to doing this. It's a great idea. It's just don't have the time to do it, you know.
Never,
between
never. I accomplish everything.
What's that?
I accomplish everything I ever set out to do. The moment, you know, I have
like,
a thought,
oh, like I designed a robot in my spare time.
Sure,
you know, which he did. You ever have that like oh, this crossbow, these war machines, all this sort of like? Imagine like he had like the greatest way to like I love having book deadlines because I can be like, hey, listen, I got a book deadline. I can't really do that. Da Vinci, like, I got to build a siege machine. Oh, I have this thing called a helicopter. Oh, I've got this multi-crossbow. Oh, an airplane. Oh, what's an airplane? I'd explain it to you, whatever. Oh, a tank. I'm building a tank. And, you know, in some of his stuff, these things weren't just like half-assed sketches. A lot of these stuff were really detailed sort of things. One of the things that he designed was he actually designed several, but he had a very cool idea for a musical instrument. And this was in his journals. They found some sketches of this sort of this kind of an interesting sort of device that would look kind of like a piano. But what it did is it had basically, instead of like striking chords, it had a spinning wheel that would draw across the strings, which would create sounds like string instruments. Okay.
Oh, and it was Da Vinci's string organ. So like bows, basically.
Yep. Somebody built this thing. Somebody actually went through, decided to build it, spent several years building it, and now we know what this thing sounds like.
Okay. So what do you think it sounds like before we hear this? Because this is an extraordinary moment. I guess it'll sound like I'd hate to reduce it to this, but when you set a Casio keyboard to, you know, stringed instrument and you play a chord and it's as if they all go.
It's gonna sound like when you put the keyboard on Bossa Nova and then you can just turn it on to Cat Meows.
Well, I think about this is that Da Vinci was known for his art, for his writing, his anatomy, his science, his inventions. What if he just sucked at music? Think about that.
The first button press sounds like,
it's like, Michael Jordan, what can he do? Baseball. Yeah. All right. It's like, what if it's one of those things where you're like, you get so excited to see what they're going to do because like, they're the most talented person in the world. And they're like, Oh boy. All right. It's great that you have that in your journal. Maybe keep it there. You know, maybe after helicopters are reality. So it's a possibility because can anybody be that talented? I mean, not just to be able
he's
to do
gotta
all
have a miss in there. I mean, I'll be the first to say it. His tank looks pretty weak sauce.
You want to know what? Yeah, I'll tell you what. We're going to take the controversial opinion. Da Vinci, overrated. We'll be right back.
I like Brian's tank. His tank, you know. I mean, understood that they didn't actually have automobiles. Actually, he did design a car. They didn't have these things at this point in time. But I'm going to say, yeah, it does. Yes, it does look like an Ewok village. But the thing about his tank, remember that tank was designed to be attacked from any angle.
That's true. It's true.
So, but anyhow, so let's
what we're
let's,
doing to him right now on this show, attacking him from every angle. Old overrated Da Vinci.
It's got to be open to the possibility. You know, you got to know your limits. You know, you got to know where, like, you know, Elon Musk, we hear this, like, all right, okay, you know, the PayPal thing was cool, but really, you're going to do electric cars? Like, no, nah, people try that. It's not going to work. Okay, yeah, you sold a few, but, you know, excuses. Oh, you want to call your rockets. Rockets are hard. Okay, yeah, okay, but you want it reusable. No, dude, you know, it's not your area.
I mean, maybe yeah, he's just good at hiding it from the wider public, though. But I'll bet you he's got some sort of, like, Babylon 5 fan fiction that he showed a friend that were like, Elon, this is terrible. Please never.
Oh, you got it. His first ever video game he made is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you read the description.
He's got it
of that.
Like 11, though, right? Like, he made a video game at like 13, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Da Vinci, let's be open to the possibility that maybe he was.
Maybe this sucks.
It's could suck. So, just be prepared for that.
Really weird. It does sound not at all like an actual symphony would.
I know, it sounds like a chamber orchestra. It sounds very much in a string section. But it's one person.
Oh my god.
I think the style of
this one, Leo.
The style of play, because you play it like a piano, means that there's less sustain and less sort of intricacies between the different parts, right?
You can hear like the harmonies on the left hand and so on, the longer notes.
Sounds pretty good to me, guys.
My god, no, it's amazing.
This is where we shake our fists at the ghost of Da Vinci and say, we'll send your comeuppance yet, mister.
Yeah, I know, it's like
again, Leo.
It's like 500
just
years
over the ridge
still
in his sketched out version of the General Lee. Like,
like, you know, in 500 years, he's still the person that we hold up to as kind of the gold standard for, like, yeah, like, oh, you know, because you're like, hey, Elon, you're kind of like a Da Vinci. Like, yeah, but really, you don't mean that.
How long until somebody tries to do a takedown? Like, there was no Da Vinci. It was a brain trust of 25 of the superminds of the time. That was their nom de plume.
I'm sure. You could have somebody could make that, but it's so much documentation about that. Now, what you can do is you could break down and say that some of the things that he did, like, you know, some of the paintings and stuff, often you work with apprentices and other people who do different portions of stuff. I think he did his stuff, but a lot of the bigger stuff, like with Michelangelo and stuff, is, you know, somebody else might do the hands or whatever. But it was just it was pretty well documented. Where Shakespeare. And Shakespeare was pretty well documented. We know a lot about him. But
the moon landing was pretty well documented, and it didn't stop a it's hard for me to picture people 30 years ago going to the moon, you know, phase, you know.
Well, but I would say what I can say the difference is, I'm going to compare that to Shakespeare, is that we have a smaller conduit information from which that comes from. And so that's why there's a greater degree of skepticism. It's like, well, NASA said this, and do we know? We never saw Shakespeare. Yeah.
Right.
But Da Vinci's like, here's a photo of me. Here's my butt. You know? Oh, you know, like, you know,
that's factually true. He did draw a picture
of
his
sure butt. Face was everywhere. And also with Shakespeare was classism. It's that very, very pervasive classism that kind of, people in Europe don't kind of acknowledge that, like, well, you know, this guy's kind of a public schools guy. Could he really have done this? You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Get some, Europe.
Yeah. Well,
you
I'm just.
Props too.
Just saying there's this, that's been a thing that, you know, they had to deal with. But anyhow, I'm kind of amazing. So guys really got to get on it.
Yep. I've created the sticker machine. It plays beautiful sounds like. Yay! Yeah, I'd say anyone could do it. Anyone could do it.
Sure, yeah, no. I'll tell you what, you could actually get your own at stickersordiaf.com.
That's right.
Get your own sticker machine, the Brian Brushwood sticker machine, as invented on the Weird Things podcast.
well, and keep in mind, it's an undocumented feature. One might say I hacked your stickers and made this machine.
Everything's a remix. Brian, you did it. I'm so pissed off. You can piss me off too by going to stickersordiaf.com.
So, speaking of inventions, we mentioned them earlier, and it's, you know, it's the obligatory Elon Musk portion of the show.
Go ahead. What's funny is I thought you were segueing into Journey Quest, but I realized that whatever Elon Musk is up to is almost equally as fantastic and unbelievable as the stuff that we're doing on Journey Quest.
Well, so he had done, but we talked about before, he unveiled his idea for the Boring Company, the idea of what he wants to do to sort of deal with urban gridlock or cars and transportation was the idea of, let's let's build tunnels. Let's make tunneling cheaper. Let's make tunneling 10% of what it costs to build a tunnel now. Let's look into using, you know, electrification, electric sleds and stuff to move cars through tunnels and do that. And predictably, I don't know if you know about this, but sometimes when Elon Musk gets interested in an area, there are a lot of people that come out to tell him, no, this time you're wrong. You don't understand what we're dealing with.
Can we predict the cycle of like, all right, Elon Musk has an idea and tweets it, right? Or is like in an interview and randomly blurts, you know, that he also is interested in this thing, right? And then there's the first wave of, oh my God, look, Elon Musk, he's at it again. He's doing a crazy thing. And then there's the wave of, Elon Musk is wrong this time. And then there's Andrew texting me, hey, actually, they're wrong. And then there's other people saying, actually, they're wrong. And then Elon Musk actually does it. Does that accurately kind of bring us to the circle of life for Elon Musk?
Yeah, and to be fair, there are some things he says he wants to do are on much longer time frames. You know, Falcon Heavy has taken much longer to launch. But meanwhile, they did improve the efficiency of the Falcon 9 that has a much heavier launch capability than it did before. Falcon Heavy, he said this was a more complicated rocket than he realized. You know, cars, these things, these slip dates move on. I don't know if you've looked at NASA's release schedule, but he's kind of ahead of them on this sort of thing. But anyhow, point is, like, yeah, he's, you know, like Hyperloop, you know, it's a crazy scheme, and will we ever see one? I'm not what you would call extremely bullish on Hyperloop for a number of reasons. I think mechanically, I think it's fine, but in this country, it's just logistically so hard to, if you don't grease enough palms to get these things done, you just don't get these big projects done.
And we've talked about this.
At the bare minimum, a statewide push and most likely a federal push to just get the money to put everything together.
Well, and also, I don't know that the U.S. has the appetite for the amount of eminent domain that would have to be pushed through to make it work. Unlike, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, you know, when the Eisenhower pushed interstate road system was pretty dope.
Well, we've done that for a lot. You know, we're some of the places where they're building that, you know, the California like high, you know, our world's slowest bullet train and stuff. I mean,
how fast does the bullet train go?
It's not a very fast bullet train.
Up to 70 miles an hour.
It's going to be the slowest.
Nobody said the bullet was fired from a gun. This is just, we're rolling it down this hill. It got like 70, 80 miles an hour.
As fast as you can throw a bullet.
Yeah. So he came out with the plan was essential. He listed a number of things that they want to do. One is that he thinks they should make tunnel diameter smaller, make narrower tunnels. That way you're not trying to put large amounts of, you know, throughput. If you decrease the size of a tunnel, then you can still put cars and other transportation through there. They don't need to be as big. So if you reduce the size of the tunnel, that's step one. Step two is the idea of how do you increase the drilling speed of your tunnel boring machine. And so one of the things you can do is that these things move very slow because they bore, they stop, they shore up the tunnel, they bore, they stop, they do this. He says if you can do that continuously, you can do that. Approaching it from an engineering point of view, he says, you know, he says, I think we can increase the efficiency of these machines. And we could make these machines go faster by increasing the cooling rate, energy ratios, et cetera. He thinks to think these things can go faster. And you know, it's one of these things where people go, why have we done that before? And part of it has to deal with the fact that if you're in large construction projects, you make more money the longer the project goes. That is sort of the trend, the way, you know, because it's like rocketry, you know, like there was no urge for ULA, Boeing, Lockheed to try to make rockets cheaper because the government was always going to pay for whatever the price was to go do it. And if you thought there was only going to be X number of launches per year, why would you reduce the cost? The same thing has to go sort of tunneling is like, they're either going to build the tunnel or not. So why are we going to try to make this more efficient? Because there's not much of an advantage to us. Who wants to put the money in the technology, et cetera? So there's a lot of areas for improvement there. And so he's listed these things out there and seems to think that he thinks that they could reduce the cost by a considerable factor. Now, he showed this video. Of this system, and it's very, you know, it's, you know, something some interns or whatever put together, and they show a Tesla going down a street, going over to a platform, that then lowers down into the ground, and then it gets put onto this high-speed sled and driven through this tunnel system. And, of course, you have people complaining, like, it's only for the rich people. Or, I'm like, I don't know. They want to pay for it, great. It's just that that immediate people have already decided
also,
they understand.
Aren't all the cars on the road Teslas in this video?
I don't think all of them are. But part of
I'm sure other ones can apply for permission to.
Well, no, actually, the purpose of the sled is the idea that if you don't have an electric car, if you're using a combustion engine car, it doesn't matter. You just park on that sled and it will drive you through there. If everybody was driving as Teslas, you wouldn't need the sled because you would just go into some auto mode and just speed through there. So and part of the video, they show, you know, these cool looking like just clear plastic dome multi-person vehicles, these buses or whatever, that get transported through there too using the system. Again, this is just a step one of like, hey, how could we make this thing work? Like, oh, this is one way we can make this thing work. And people are already going like, well, this is his plan. The core of the plan is let's build tunnels cheaper and faster. You know, let's build tunnels cheaper and faster. That's the base idea there, to see if they can reduce that by a factor of 10, which he did that with one of the most impossible things you could do with his rockets. Let's let him try to do that with tunnels, because if he reduces it by a factor of only by half, we've got a great tunneling technology.
It's tremendous gains. Yeah.
Yeah. So the criticisms have come in place, and the criticisms have been, one, people is it only for rich people to do this? Like, I think it's for everybody, and how we get in and out of it. These are things that need to be solved, but I think we could all agree, like, wouldn't cheaper tunnels be good? Wouldn't cheaper tunnels be good? You know, how we utilize it's next. But then the biggest arguments I've read, two papers where they criticize it, like, you know, with the headlines, like, so-and-so demolishes this Elon Musk thing, and it's from urban planners who are heavily involved in trying to figure out how we solve the transportation problems, is they point out one of the things, which is, it's just this thing, when you add more roads, when you add more capacity, you still get gridlock, their cars meet the capacity, right? And it's sort of an observation, it's a very common thing, like, well, here's the problem, you add more roads, you still get more cars, more people want to drive. This is an interesting fact, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's not an infinite number of people with cars on the planet.
I'll provisionally accept your thesis.
So what they fail to sort of account for when they say that, like, well, if you just add more tunnels, just going to be clogged tunnels. It's like, yes, because we add roads like 20 years to 30 years behind the growth rate at which we need them. So by the time you get those roads, we needed those 20 years ago. We need X more. And that's the problem. And also trying to build roads and add roads, as you point out, Brian, eminent domain is challenging. It is problematic. And this solution says, well, if we can build these things pretty cheaply underground, you can build one under the other one and under the other one and under the other one.
Well, and especially for, like, that does take away the number one thing that my concern about Hyperloop ever happening. If the law is written such that you could just that is essentially, I guess, mineral rights is pretty well established law, but I don't know about the right to pass through underneath someone else's territory.
You'd need government approval on that one.
But at some point, there's got to be like an international depth or something you could get to. Like,
well, I don't think it's going to be
international waters.
Yeah. We're deep enough now that anything goes. Eat this koala. Where did it come from?
We've been dealing with this, with the issues of part of it with fracking and stuff, where the problem is that you have, you know, actual examples of fracking contamination are like really hard to find, but you get documentaries that show like, oh, look at this natural gas coming out of my faucet. Yeah, it did that before. That's why they wanted to get natural gas there, by the way, you know, because you got a lot of it. And you get this very big misunderstanding and stuff. But there are cases, though, where, like, you know, pumping water into these areas and stuff can shift, can cause earth minor tremors and stuff like that. That is real. That's earth moving can do that. That is not, you know, a thing that's, you know, that controversial, but a lot of the other implications for it. And so Elon Musk has made a very big point, like, hey, these things go deep enough, you won't feel them, you won't even know they're there, because the earth absorbs so much of this, you know, the energy going through there, whatever. But anyhow, point is that the biggest argument I've seen against this is, you know, people sort of taking apart the small parts, but then it comes into like the biggest thing is like well, it's not the solution we need, is we need to be moving to mass transit. We need to be moving to bicycles. We need to be moving to this thing, which is people arguing a social engineering solution is the answer versus.
I mean, I think this gets to, I think, a frustrating point for me where we start to debate solutions instead of problems, right? And we debate all solutions as if they are natural competitors to other solutions, because when you think in a world where, okay, you're right, the federal government, state government, city government is probably only going to be able to back one thing. And if there was not a current world's slowest bullet train thing that had been pushed really, really hard by politicians.
Most expensive per mile and the slowest per mile.
Right. Like, then maybe something like Hyperloop would be something that would catch flight. So in that practical sense, I can see where, you know, you have where you're jockeying to get blessed by this higher body. But if we're just literally talking about it on paper as to what is the most effective and what is going to be the one that will benefit us the most, I hate when we can shut down conversation because, oh, but this is better and this is different and this is what we should be focusing on as this other thing. That's so frustrating to me.
Yeah, man, we experienced that in our own level 5 years ago when we were going around in circles about space elevator or reusable rocket. Like, I totally had blinders on. I was so the perfect is the enemy of the good and all that. And it turns out that I would have not had been dialed into the greatest, most interesting space travel phenomenon of my lifetime.
Well, there's part of what's a useful thing to think about is marginal utility. Is a little bit of this thing helpful or useful? The problem with the Hyperloop is you need a lot of huge infrastructure, billions of dollars of infrastructure to build this thing, get it up and running. And once we have that, it could be paradigm changing. If the minimum viable product that the Boring Company produces is a faster, cheaper way to tunnel, there's a lot of implications that we can use that already. And that's why these people who are so sort of dismissive of this, it's like, all right, you've got a guy that's worth like $16 billion right now who wants to put a bunch of money into making much more efficient tunnel machines, who has a habit, by the way, of sometimes if he can't pursue something, just opening up the technology for everybody to use. What is bad about this? But the argument I've heard is that the city planner is like, well, it's distracting from the solutions we need, which is we need to move to mass transit and stuff, which is like, I don't like mass transit. I'm going to say it, all right? I'm going to be controversial here. I like being able to get into my car and go wherever I want to, when I want to, and not have to wait for a schedule, wait for a time frame, and not being afraid that if I'm going to some mass transit thing at 2 a.m., I'm going to get mugged because I'm not in my personal little protective bubble, okay? I'm just going to say that. I don't like – that's my problem with mass transit. It works great in cities that are built on top of it. It's very useful, but – you know, there's some of those cities, man, just a certain time of night, you'd rather hop into an Uber or a car than try to take, you know, transit. And also, it doesn't get you.
There's absolutely no doubt about it. And part of it's cultural. You know, I think, you know, I grew up in Florida where you drive everywhere. That's what you do. You drive 5 minutes to the store, you drive 50 minutes, you drive an hour, right? Like that's just what happens. And now that I'm here in the Bay Area, I take BART a fair amount. But, you know, by and large, you know, even though I'm looking to sell my car, I'm only doing that because I have Uber, I have Lyft, and I have this gig car thing now. So I have like triple redundancy that I can get exactly where I need to get, exactly when I want to get there in the same way that I would my own car. That's the only reason why I would think about selling my own car, because I have three car facsimile replacements that I have at my fingertips.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's – and that's the thing, is that there's an attitude that's like, well, you know, it's for the greater good. You know, we need to move – and it's like mass transit's like there's – it's a fetish in some – it's useful. It's extremely useful in places that have super high density, whatever. Absolutely effective, and it's part of the solution. It's part of that, and I think that we should encourage more forms of mass transportation when we can, and making that cost lower. But also, one of the problems of mass transportation systems is they are way more expensive than we talk about. You know, we talk about like, you know, they're the things I talk about, like you know, what you think you're paying for, what it actually costs, and you look at how that gets spread across different budgets and stuff, and what the total cost over time is. One of the things they don't really do a lot of, you don't get a lot of statistics about like the total amount of, let's say, CO2 emissions for mass transit systems, because they try not to measure things like if they don't have a certain number of riders on a bus, then they say that's not really an effective period in which to measure it, even though the bus is running and producing it stuff, because it works counter purpose, because they're, you know, in their idea, well, in our optimized state, it's going to be great. It's like, well, I see a lot of buses running around empty, you know, half empty or whatever. So now, that's my opinion.
A few people are making the point that, you know, creating long tendrils all through the Earth's crust, who knows the real effects? And Open Bayou says if there's multiple tunnels under L.A. and those collapse, what does it do to the soil? Would it make earthquake-proof buildings unstable? I don't know the answer to that. And if there was some kind of expert on the tension of the earth and how many tunnels you can dig through stuff before the above ground becomes unstable, I'm excited to read it.
We have an expert here to talk about it. He's an ancient Roman sewer construction guy.
Oh, my gosh. What's his name?
Yeah, Sewerus Makus. Listen, we've been making tunnels and stuff underneath for a long, 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 long time. L.A. has got its own subway system, has had historic tons of tunnels and things like that. You shore up your tunnels, you're fine. People go, what about earthquakes? You're actually better in many cases in a tunnel than you are on a building, because tunnels are designed to already have earth collapsed over them. So it's not this, you know, as far as the dangers or the problems from it like this, you shore them up, whatever. We've been building tunnels for a long time.
And that's a really good point, because like if you're in a tunnel, you are in the most possible reinforced archway of literal bedrock above you. That's bedrock is the medium by which the vibrations of earthquakes travel, right? So you wouldn't worry about it just breaking apart above you, or at least you shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, there are tunnel collapses, there are bridge collapses, there are building collapses. There's good construction, there's bad construction. We have an idea of when we're pretty good at, you know, knowing what you need the minimums are for that. But I mean, we are, you know, between your sewer systems and other things underneath you about that, you know, are great. People said the Boring Company's real purpose about Mars. I don't think so. I think there's a spinoff capability of being able to put a boring machine in useful for Mars. I think the Boring Company's purpose is the fact that where Elon Musk lives in Bel Air, between Bel Air and where the SpaceX and Tesla design studio is, it's a painful drive. It's a painful drive. And for him to go home every night and to spend an hour in traffic and be thinking, you know, hey, I'm worth $15 billion and I've got to wait on the 405 an hour and a half to get home. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
And taking romantic walks with Amber Heard in a hole he drilled in his parking lot. Like, you could set up a nice little picnic in there and, you know, some really sweet lanterns.
I had some stars imported and painted on the top of this tunnel.
Yep. So, anyhow, gentlemen, time now for Journey West.
Journey Quest!
Only there was a way to know what happened last time.
Oh, damn it, I closed that tab. Hold on.
Previously on
Journey Quest!
Mr. Winston Churchill's about to show up, and then Lynn's going to show up a little bit later.
We can't solve every problem with killing the Sovereign.
And I kill him.
The Justin and Brian in my timeline, they were part of my experiment. They were on board to go back and to try to fix history to make things right.
So, if I recall correctly, Matthew McConaughey from in this timeline or wherever he comes from, turned. I'm sure he's still a gifted actor, but also his genius is truly expressed in the ability to manipulate timelines and place himself to fight against what in his timeline was the greatest disaster of all of history, Boris.
Correct.
And now we found out that that there are alternate versions of us as who? Winston Churchill and
yeah. So you're in Eagle's Nest. You're hanging out with Matthew McConaughey / Hitler. Mm. He surprised you guys with a couple of guests who showed up. Winston Churchill showed up, who actually turns out it's alternate timeline Justin.
Another wait, really?
Yeah, and then Vladimir Lenin, alternate timeline Brian, but our timeline Brian had a plan. What did you do? What was that plan? What did you do?
Oh, man, that was a whole week ago. You're going to have to refresh my memory.
Let's just say that there's one less person in the room.
Oh,
right. You stabbed. You you took a side and killed Mussolini? No, you killed
Lenin.
Lenin. Yeah, you killed.
He killed himself.
I killed myself.
Lenin.
Yeah. No, they're going to be one. Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. And I'm like, I stand up with blood on my hands. I say, not murder, suicide. Different thing. Victimless crime.
Still illegal.
Not a victimless crime. You literally just murdered somebody. Again, you have one solution to everything. Murder the person in charge.
I start taking off my clothes and I start stripping fake Brian. I put on the Lenin stuff and I shave my facial hair appropriately.
I hope that he was skinnier than you, and now you feel bad about yourself.
All right, so what's the game plan, fellas?
So we all know you murdered your alternate timeline guy, and we're all sort of like,
again, suicide.
We're like, well, that's an interesting take or approach, you know.
It's called game theory. I'm too useful to you now. You can't have me killed because you don't have a backup. I'm the one and only. See, whatever your plan was with that Joker, you're going to have to work it out with me now.
So you want to be Lenin? You are voluntarily stepping into the position where you are Vladimir Lenin?
Life makes you think.
In back home.
No, okay, first of all, look. Can I let you in? I request a sidebar with the real Justin, not this fat alcoholic faker sitting over there. The fake.
By the way, Justin and Churchill Justin are sitting on the couch, smoking cigars, drinking some scotch, just laughing it up, and they're kind of like, in a moment, Bri. Whatever, just vi, Bri-vi.
Bri-vi.
And then meanwhile, Churchill Justin just looks at Brian witheringly and says, "Those pants look a little tight."
All right. I start thinking to myself, if only there's some way that I can like sell everyone the idea of equality, but quietly keep all the power to myself. That would be really satisfying right around now.
So finally, then they're like, "All right, let your friend come over here and speak."
All right. Hey, Justin, number one, I strongly advise you to kill your doppelganger. It's the only way to ensure that you're still useful. Also, Justin's doppelganger, if this one ends up getting chewed up, I assume you and I can continue our friendship just fine.
We are of the same mind that either will kill the other one. We each have very, very valuable parts to play in our timelines. Low, we might disagree that they have solved all of history's problems right now. Oh, I think we have, I say as Winston Churchill.
I grab the corpse of my alter ego and open and close the gaping maw.
Wait, now you're showing the corpse.
We agree that only you should have one of each of you.
Why are you disguised as him now? You're flaunting the corpse.
Also one thing that you don't do after you commit suicide, which is a crudely puppeteer your corpse. Like, that is a thing that only murderers can do, not people who commit suicide.
All right, first of all, I don't believe that this is a real being. I think they're all replicants. But the point is, I had to wear the costume because
Jesus, Alex Jones.
I am certain that... I would like to think that Alex is the middle name of the Jesus Jones from the band Jesus Alex Jones.
Stop stalling.
Yeah, look, hey, if you whatever it is you needed Lenin to do, he can still do. Here, this guy, Lenin.
All right, Hitler McConaughey. What did you gather everybody here for before my chucklehead friend murdered somebody again?
Suicide. It's all a right. Suicide.
There's a knock on the door. McConaughey. Oh, he's here. Cinnamon. I. This is special. Hold on.
What is this, laughing? Like, why is everybody just like walking through the door?
Maybe he's called people together, you know? Okay.
Oh my God. That would explain why we're all here.
Guy in a U.S. Army uniform, black guy, right? walks in there, says, hello, everybody. Nods to you, Justin. Nods to Churchill. Looks over to Brian and punches you flat in the face. Boom. Floors you.
I smile with a devil may care grin and say, well, I guess I deserve
that. Punches you again, Brian. All punches right. you again.
And then I go into a Cool Hand Luke routine where I just keep getting up and just keep taking it in the face over and over again.
You punches, you're knocked out. You think you're getting up, but it's like 15 minutes later you get up off the ground.
I sleep the peaceful, guiltless sleep of a babe.
I like to imagine that Brian just does keep trying to get up to do the witty, like next time you gotta go.
Eventually,
and I'll tell you what, urine's a lot stronger.
Eventually, I'm just bubbling out of this mishmash of teeth.
So like they finally you get up and he's like just standing over you and McConaughey, Hitler's laughing and Churchill's laughing and how does it feel to get your clock cleaned by Joe Louis / alternate future Brian, because when you killed Brian Lennon, he went back to the future, but he went back now into Joe Louis's body to kick your ass.
I try to say the words, well, all's fair in love and war.
Boom,
but all that, okay.
Yeah. So, guys, here are the rules. The way this works is if you go back in time into somebody else's body and you die, you don't die. You just go back to the future. You snap back like a rubber band. And if you got a little bit of a grudge, maybe you go back into somebody else's body.
I glance over.
Now apologize,
to see
Brian.
If there's any knives nearby.
My God. Wait, do you want him to come back as somebody else more powerful than Joe Louis?
I grab the knife and then start stabbing my throat and say, I'll see you in a bit, suckers!
Wait, you or the alternate?
No,
you?
Me. Me to me.
And then as Brian bleeds out on the floor, McConaughey's like, yeah, it only works if you use time travel like we do, not if you use the machine and you really come back in time.
With my last strength, I lift up my right hand and do that snapping, gosh darn it, since I can't breathe, I indicate the don't.
No, and then so I go grab Matthew McConaughey's time travel weed and I stick it in Brian's gaping neck wound so he sucks in some of the magical weed elixir and hopefully he comes back so I can personally kill him.
So we're in a bit of a quandary here, Brian, since you've effectively murdered yourself.
Twice? But if you keep back, hopefully I come back. I mean, I assume.
Because the weed, his time travel weed, is that the secret to them coming back?
Well, it's not so much the weed. It's a chemical in it. McConaughey just used it as an excuse, you know, when he's working with this chemist, Dolph Lundgren. He's like, yeah, this is chemical. It's a quantum XD, it's a, you know, kind of this psycho hallucinogenic quantum effect sort of thing. And man, he's like, could we smoke it? He's like, I get stable enough. I get so we could put it in weed. Like, yeah, we don't need. Nope. All right. We got it. I mean, like an IV drip would be. Nope. Nope. And so it turns out you don't really need to have it in there. But he's just, you know.
Okay. Can I get enough of it in Brian so he comes back while he's sucking air from his neck wounds?
No, I mean, Brian's, like, bleeding out. He's, like, bleeding out. Man. And McConaughey's like, listen, man, your friend's going to die
unless
we have a version that lets you travel forward in time. But, uh-huh. I mean, not like to your back to your present, but, like, into the future. And then you could go take it back again. Problem is you got to kind of like, you know, it's a random sort of time frame. Like, what's your future like right now, by the way?
It's pretty good, you know, there's this whole thing with Hitler where Hitler is bad. He's our Boris, basically. Okay. But it seems like everything's going on here. If you're just chilling out with Joe Louis, like, you know, he was a Hitler. The Hitler in our timeline was pretty particular about his company, if you catch my drift.
No, I put in some, you know, some good changes and stuff and whatnot, and
Hey, listen, big fan of what you're doing here. But enough of the small talk. So, yeah, let's just go into this unstable future so I can grab the
future's fine. You know, I talked to some other travelers that came from a future, like some apocalypse happened and wiped out a bunch of stuff. And
Yeah, sorry. There's also that. Sorry, we've been on this journey for a while. So, yeah, there's an apocalypse, and yeah, everything's kind of broken down. In fact, it's part of the reason why we're here. We fell into the clutches of a fairly evil, militant organization.
You were kind of subtly criticizing, you know, my regime. Got it. Interesting. Anyhow, so yeah, what you can do is if you want to take this and take your pop into a random future, you might be able to get some sort of technology or something like that that can help you.
I mean, if it's that, or he's gonna be dead. As much as I look at my Winston Churchill clone, and he's just holding up a cigar and a scotch, and it's like, and he looks at me and says, "Well, jolly old pal, you could just come and let me do half the work." And I go, "Ah." And then I look at Brian's corpse as he just has the glass corpses, eyes.
Plural corpses.
Yes.
The plural corpses of Brian. And I just, meanwhile, for whatever reason, despite the fact that it's out of time, like the Benny Hill girls in bikinis start surrounding my Winston Churchill clone. And I'm like, no, for my friend Brian. Let's go to the unstable future where he's probably going to die anyway.
All right. So Matthew McConaughey takes out McConaughey Hitler, takes out a special little humidor, opens it up and presents to – actually, it's just a vial. It's a vial of liquid. It says, okay, this is it. Just take it. Oh, here's the other one. Just put this in your pocket. This is the one that brings you back here.
Oh, we can come back here.
Well, you got to leave your body here. You can't bring him with you, so you got to go bring some technology back here.
Oh, Jesus. All right. I swallow the vial.
I mean, we would try to feed it to him, but it would just pour out through his neck hole.
I hold my throat long enough to blow out the words, "That's a good point, actually. He's got a point."
Joe Louis just punches you again. All right.
All right. I drink the vial.
All right. All of a sudden, very cold, very, very cold, very, very cold, very cold. Like your body's starting to shut down. And then everybody starts to move really, really fast around you. You watch Joe Louis punch Brian a few more times. You know, he's on the ground out of it.
You start and hearing then, a Peter Glass composition in the background from like it's Coin of Scotsy. Yeah. Philip Glass. Here we go.
Yeah. Then little Brian Eno in there too. Then all of a sudden, all white goes all white. And then you see stars, colorful stars, cosmic-y stars, kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which will be my pick this week. And then things start to fade. And you're in a living room. It's a very, very nice living room. You see windows, you see trees out beyond there. It's beautiful. Nice sprawl, sort of like, you know, ranch home kind of sprawl, whatever, like this. And there's a desk in front of you there, and you're sitting in a chair comfortably, and a voice says, and you know, it's like there's like a hologram TV, by the way, like a hologram TV floating, you know, there, kind of cool. And a voice says, "I've been waiting for you." And it's a very familiar voice. And you turn around, and next time on Journey Quest.
Oh, what a cliffhanger.
By the way, J.C. Calhoun points out that in my timeline that I came from, it's Peter Glass, not Phil
My
Glass.
Apologies, Brian. I apologize.
I think you could probably leave off the GL.
Gentlemen, it's time for picks.
Yeah, man. Dude, so you preemptively striking with the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'll back that play. It was pretty good. Nope.
Yeah, I will too. Do we want to have a little spoilery discussion about it?
Yeah, I'm down for it.
Tune out now if you don't know Guardians of the Galaxy spoilers.
Yeah. So out now, if you don't want spoilers, I don't have a ton to say about it, except for the fact that I did really, really like it. I think that it has a far slower pace, and I think that there are some kind of questionable plot decisions. It does not move at the same kinetic energy as the first one, but for being a movie that doesn't follow the Marvel, the very typical Marvel playbook, I thought it was emotional and resonant, and especially by the end of it, I really enjoyed it, despite the fact that it literally had like zero tie-in to anything else in the larger Marvel universe, cosmic or otherwise.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by that. Of course, you know, I had no evidence to back up my idea that it would be there, but outside of the fact that it just seems like by now we should be getting, man, that guy's gonna sit up out of that chair and put on that glove at some point. It's been a decade, a literal decade of them explaining to us that a dude wants a glove and sits in a chair. Looking forward to meeting that guy. You know, I watched it twice over this last week, once with Penny and then again with Josie. And they were very, very different experiences. You know, watching with Penny, you know, the first time, it was very easy to get caught up in the surprise. Like, that's one thing Guardians of the Galaxy does extraordinarily well, is surprise and delight by you know, introducing new vectors and threads and having stuff pay off. You know, it's very, very efficient script writing. Almost nothing is wasted that doesn't get a callback later on. But watching it the second time, you notice how many of the jokes played well because they had that good surprise pop, but weren't necessarily hilarious on the face of it. For example, you know, selling they work pretty hard to sell the bit of the name Taserface, but my guess is there's a lot funnier names that were pitched when, you know, before they needed to adhere to
Taserface is a real character.
Yes, that's fine. That's fine. That also
not that character. So, but yeah, but they wanted to take a funny name, like, from the original canon, yeah.
Sure, sure. But at any rate, you know, some of it doesn't stand up nearly as well on the second viewing, but that was also my case with Guardians of the Galaxy 1. The first time through, both movies was just exquisite, joyful, amazing, over-the-top success. Second and third viewings on the first one, and certainly second viewing on the second one, bigger diminished returns than I would have expected. Because, like, you know, I watched Logan twice and only loved Logan more the second time. This one, I was surprised. I guess shouldn't have been surprised. But second viewing had a drop off.
I enjoyed it. It was fun. Characters are very, very likable. To your point, Brian, my issue came from some of the jokes kind of got done over and over again. Like, Taserface is funny once or twice, but then it became this, we're going to keep doing the Taserface kind of joke. You're like, okay, Baby Groot, like, I love Baby Groot in the trailer. And then I'm like, man, there's a lot of Baby Groot here. Sometimes a little less is more. You know, that was the kind of thing where I'm like, you know, kind of like the opening where we get a lot of him just to show us how adorable he is. And I'm kind of like, I'm kind of bored with him now. You know, I'm kind of like, later on when he had more to do with, sort of, that was a little got to me. The thing that really got to me, though, and again, I enjoy this movie thoroughly. Go see it. Please, please, please go see it. It is still a really good movie. But if I'm going to say, like, why I didn't go like, oh my God, it was great, was that, you know, you talk about movies, you have A plots and you have B plots. A plots, the major plot, B plot, sort of the other plot, kind of part of a character arc or whatever. Peter Quill effectively does nothing for 2/3 of this movie. And it is waiting for things to be revealed to him. He's kind of a Mary Jane in this movie, where it's just, he's brought here and he's brought here and he's brought here. And it's not until really the last part of the movie, and I'm hesitant to use an act because it doesn't really fit into an act breakdown thing as far as on first thought. It's sort of, that's a thing that kind of guy go, there's no tension. I'm just waiting for things to be revealed to him. He's not making any active decisions. And the situations they've got into felt more like kind of writerly sort of ways they're there. Whereas the first one, everybody had a clear, I got to get this, I got to get this, I need to do this and do that. And each moment they're trying to accomplish that. As Justin pointed out, there was as much sitting around in chairs as there was in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And that was why you talk about rewatchability, Brian. That's the thing that came down to it for me, is like, do I want to watch it again? Like, well, a lot of it's just waiting for the setup at the end. I'm not watching them accomplish things in the middle. Extremely entertaining movie. The characters are fun. There's a lot of great moments, but you look at a lot of the things that some of the action sequences there were kind of like, yeah, this is a great thing, but if I took this out of there, do we get to the point that we were trying to get to before sufficiently without sort of having to resolve anything, you know? So I concur with you, Brian.
JC Calhoun here in the chat says it seemed like they were fitting the story in between songs, and the first one didn't seem like that. I think that the first one, if you were going to criticize its story, you know, maybe is a little bit overly writerly in terms of like why they need to be running from one place to another, but they are running from one place to another, right? That they're kind of constantly in flux, and they're visiting fun new worlds, and they're finding fun new people. And there's an element of that here, but it certainly is not nearly as pervasive as the first one. And there's just a lot of everybody kind of being okay with sitting on this planet that we kind of know. And the movie sort of kind of makes a wink at like, yeah, we know that Peter's dad's going to be evil or the bad guy, because otherwise he better be. Because we don't really have another bad guy in this movie.
Well, and that was one of my frustrations. Recently, I took some heat on Twitter because I said that after rewatching Guardians of the Galaxy a year and change after watching it the first time, it didn't hold up nearly as well as I thought. And part of the reason is, you know, you spend the first two acts with the major threat to him being, you know, Yondu wanting to collect him and grab the bounty or whatever. And then, you know, once you see that, you know, it turns out fine in the end, that tension really doesn't carry the next time you watch it. He seems like a much less credible villain. This time, even more so in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, partly because the marketing, the one teaser trailer is saying to Yondu, welcome to the Guardians, like, your family. As a result, the two biggest moments are, you know, bad guys or gray characters, you know, go entirely light side, or at least go from dark side to gray side, you know. And both of those evolutions were all flatly, I don't want to say ruined, or I mean just marketed to. It's like you had to sit through the whole movie to finally get caught up with what you could have learned while buying a 6-inch sub at Subway.
Well, and I thought that, I mean, we love Rooker, you know, the Yondu's neat, but it was just this, you know, part of the emotional thing is what happens to him there. But I'm like, it felt earned to me. It didn't feel like I wanted, if you wanted to do the first 20 minutes of this movie, young Peter Quill and Yondu, and show us that, not tell us in flashbacks or like, no, you really were like my dad. You really like, that wasn't earned. That you counted on how likable the characters were, which made it carry through, but that wasn't earned. And I didn't feel, you know, I'm watching, it's like, oh, okay, he's gone. All right, it's cool. So everybody's sad, so I feel bad because I liked him, but it didn't feel like it had not a lot of weight. And then when they're on the planet, Ego, I mean, I was sitting there going, so when does C-3PO stumble into the closet full of stormtroopers? I'm waiting for that moment. And I mean, literally waiting. And then like, oh, it's a cave. That's where we get that moment. But, you know.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I would have loved to have seen a little bit more of an excavation of Yondu making that decision with a young Peter Quill to not bring him back, right? Like
to their credit, I thought they did a great job of showing the emptiness Yondu felt after having sex with these whores, you know, that bleep blop their brains back, you know, and he's just, you know, cold and alone. I thought that was a really good scene.
No, I think we've done a lot of criticizing in the movie. I think one of the things that it does really, really well is that I felt for everybody's kind of emotional arc. At times I felt like they were either underexplained in the case of Yondu or overexplained, as, you know, like we get it with Yondu and Rocket, that we don't need to exactly have him say the words, you're exactly like me.
Right.
Yeah.
But I bought all of them. And I felt that they came to a very emotional and satisfying resolution by the end of the movie.
Gunn's a wonderful filmmaker. He's making, he's breaking the mold and doing his own thing, which I absolutely love. And that it's a testament of how great he does his characters, that even though I'm a plot guy, I'm a plotter, you know, when I write or whatever, I think that thing through and I think that sort of thing through, and at the expense of, you know, in first drafts, often at the expense of some of the characterization, even though the motivations are there, maybe not articulating it. So I respect somebody who can sort of do kind of have so much strong characterization there to it that it can just, you know, carry over. And like Abrams is like that with Star Trek and stuff. Like Star Trek's a fun movie. You look at the plot. You're like, this just makes no sense. That was the issue with Force Awakens too. But the characters are super strong, and that's hard. And that's when we look at what's the problem going on in other cinematic film comic universes, is that they're getting applause for putting somebody in a costume on the screen, but you're enjoying it if you're bringing your collection of comics in your head to the movie. If you're not, and you're just going to see what the movie is, you're not enjoying it. Versus what, you know, James Gunn did is he took the most obscure titles you could imagine, and they have become the most beloved characters in that universe, which is wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and that's something that I had really hoped we would have encountered by now with the Disney's acquisition of Star Wars. And I understand there's only so many slots they get, but we've talked about this in some other venues where it's like I'm really ready to see some blank canvas Star Wars stories that nothing has to be wedged into anything else, which is what we got with the first Guardians of the Galaxy. By picking this obscure corner of the Marvel universe, they could set their own tone, their own rules, and everything.
But at the same time, as soon as that big old blob started taking over that small town in Virginia, weren't you like, all right, yeah, okay, cool. So that's how they're going to get an Avengers cameo in a Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah, little surprise.
And you're like, really? No one? Not like Ant-Man isn't going to look at CNN and go, holy crap, just see that? Like literally nothing? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we'll see some Guardians of the Galaxy wink in Ragnarok. We do see briefly Jeff Goldblum in the credits of Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, I caught that. That was pretty cool.
I did love the disco.
The fact that
David Hasselhoff narrated disco track at the end.
Yeah, written by James Gunn, according to the credits on there. That was amazing.
Also, like, I don't know what the hell they're setting up with the, like, original Guardians of the Galaxy with Sylvester Stallone and the Miley Cyrus robot and the diamond face guy, but, like, I'm into it. Not sure. Give me a movie where Sylvester Stallone is another Guardian of the Galaxy. Fine. I'm in.
I'm watching that like, man, I wanted the first act to be early on in young little Peter Quill kind of thing. That was kind of like, it made me go like, man, and I will say, I thought the young Kurt Russell effect looked great.
Oh yeah, I was prepared for the icky factor of the Uncanny Valley. None of it. I thought all of it was great.
You know, they should send an interdepartmental memo about what they do for that. You know, like let's get all the Disney. I'm not going to name what movie really bothered me, but like, you know, it's in the same umbrella. Just go ahead and get an email chain going embarrass everybody.
I thought it looked good on Robert Downey Jr. That's not the scene you're talking about, is it?
No. Let's say I hope that they'll do better.
All right, I'm with you.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.